taking part in these protests throughout. Now, what's the problem? What's kicking off? Why are our friends, comrades over the channel getting so angry? Well, the situation is that in France, they do enjoy fairly reasonable labour laws compared to us, for example, or even compared to the Germans. And the keystone of these labour laws has been the 35-hour week, and also it's very difficult to fire a worker in France. Much more difficult in France to fire a worker than what it is, say, over here, for example. Now, these labour laws, they weren't just given to them. These have been well fought. These have been fought for by militants over the years. And you can remember back a few decades, you know, the French do like direct action. They do like to take to the streets. Mm-hmm. And to be perfectly honest, it has been fairly successful for them over the years. Mm-hmm. You've only got to remember back to when lorry drivers were blockading the motorways for a 55-year retirement age. And that's the sort of thing they do. Fishermen were blockading the ports so the ferries couldn't leave over their claims. Even farmers, I have once read a story about spraying one of the town hall in one of the villages with manure from a muck spreader, or herding sheep through, you know, at rather inconvenient times. So these are the sort of things they do, and on the whole, they do work. Because this is an ongoing thing as I speak, I've had to read Socialist Worker today, and apparently there was a big demonstration today, not reported on the BBC, I hasten to add, but there was a big demonstration today, and the CGT actually cut down the internet connections and cut off the phone connections for 9 hours. Rail workers were on strike, and rail workers and hauliers are actually set to begin all-out strikes. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of rage over there. There's a lot of anger over there about these changes to these labour laws. So let's look in a little bit more detail as to what exactly is going on with these labour laws. Now, these labour laws were set up in about the 1990s. On the whole, they're still there. They're still working. Obviously, consecutive right-wing governments have tried to erode them a little bit. But on the whole, most people are working the 34-hour week. If you work more than 35 hours, then you get fairly generous bonus payments. So on the whole, they're there, although there has been an attempt to erode them over the years. So currently, if a little bit more detail here, we look at 35-hour week. Now, what the new laws are looking for is to temporarily increase this to 60 hours a week and to reduce those bonus payments when they work over 35 hours. So that's one of the things the new labour laws are looking at. They want to reduce the cap on legal damage for unfair dismissal. So, for example, a worker with 20 years employment would only collect a 12-month salary if fired. There'll be rule changes on dismissal. So before, there had to be a very valid justification for dismissal, but now, under the new laws, they just want economic necessity would just be enough to get you fired. Firms are permitted to negotiate offensive agreements. Before, they have to prove they're either going bankrupt or they're having to avoid layoffs. So the criteria before were quite rigid, quite strict. What they're saying now is that is not good for business. Business is seeing these labour laws as an intolerable burden, and they want to be free of them. But for labour, the new law would be catastrophic. It would destroy hard-won gains achieved over decades of struggle. And not surprisingly, since the 2 months since the announcement of these new labour reforms, the Socialist Party has been hemorrhaging members. Now, I did say the word Socialist Party. President Hollande is the head of the Socialist Party. He's a Socialist President. So it seems rather odd for us that these are coming from a so-called Socialist government. So why is Hollande going down this route? What's driving him? Why is he going down this this route? Well, there might be a couple of reasons. One of the reasons is he's been one of the most unpopular presidents since they've started taking polls. He's only got about 15% in the polls, so that's as low as he could probably go. Unless his mother doesn't want to. So he has a big problem about re-election. He has a big problem about re-election. Now, one of the big problems in France is the youth unemployment is riding at about 25%.
Wow.
And overall employment is riding at about 10%. So what Hollande wants to do is apply a policy of market liberation and create a more favorable climate for business. They must be looking across at England and licking their lips because of the deregulation that's occurred over here. That hasn't necessarily occurred in France. They must be licking their lips and saying that over here we have 0 hours contracts, you know, we have agency work, we have part-time work, and we have temporary work. And the business people in France would just love this because it would increase their rate of profit. They're struggling with their rate of profit at the moment, and they would just love this deregulation of the labour market. So that's pretty well what it's about. Hollande thinks if he can get the employment rates down, it might help him go up in the polls. The other reason, if you're a cynic, is that I'm afraid to say, and I think we've got to face fact, comrades, that the National Front in France is doing rather well. It is doing rather well, and I hate to say that, but I'm afraid we've got to face up to it. And in recent years, the second round of the presidential election is basically a runoff between the National Front and Another. Okay? Now, last time, if you remember, Jean-Marie Le Pen, and it was Nicolas Sarkozy from the Conservatives who made the final round, the second round. So socialists like us, anti-fascists, had to hold our noses and tick Conservative to keep the fascist out, and that's exactly what happened. Hollande thinks possibly this time, with this more right-wing agenda that he's pushing, these labour reform laws, his right-wing agenda, he may well split the right vote. And if he splits the vote on the right, it might mean that he actually gets to the second round. So he's in the runoff, this time against the daughter, Marine Le Pen. And of course, on this occasion, once again, Conservatives, not that we feel too sorry for them, Conservatives are going to have to hold their nose and tick socialists. Because obviously, whatever Conservatives are, they're not fascists. So this is possibly what's going on. Now, if Hollande wants to reduce the unemployment rate, this is not the way to go about it. It is not the way to go about it. Because if you force employees to work longer hours, you're not going to reduce the unemployment rate. If you're going to fire workers at the drop of a hat, then you're not going to reduce the unemployment rate. It's not the way to go about it. As I said, when these laws were initially introduced in the 90s, they were very successful at bringing down unemployment. Very successful. The only sort of jobs that you create when you go down this road are the sort of jobs we have over here. Part-time, low-wage, and precarious mini-jobs, as they were saying. So the CGT, back to the more militant of the unions. There is another union called the CFDT. That is a kind of reformist union. So we do find that the left is a bit split as well, I'm afraid, on this. You've got one large union reformist, you've got one large union who are actually leading the campaign on this, the CGT, what we call the more militant union. And they actually claim that if a move to 32-hour week would actually create 4.5 million jobs. But as I said, the left is weaker in France because of internal crisis and what's been going on over there. Now, because the left has become weak, and because workers feel left down by the left, you get the rise of the demigod, don't you? Workers were relying on Hollande, socialist government, were relying on him to look after them, and he clearly is not. You get the rise of the demagogue. Now, the National Front does denounce unfettered capitalism. It does. Promises to defend workers from economic globalization. This is the National Front. And unchecked immigration, because you've got to get that in there for the National Front. So this is sounds rather good to a lot of workers, especially the former industrial areas of northern France. They are a growing number of far-right voters among workers up in that region. But we've got to look on the positive side here. With this rising tide of demonstrations, we might even call it the Paris Spring, this rising tide of demonstrations, are the fortunes for the left changing in France? Because as I've said before, French people do realize that street protest does work. Hollande, when he was drawing up these reform laws, one of his own ministers said, but will they take to the streets? I mean, they're really scared in France of take to the streets, because French people will take to the streets. French people are not so heavily unionized as we are. You know, we have about 8 million people in unions. They have 4 million people in unions. They're not as heavily. If they've got a beef or a grievance, they're out. They've got a beef or a grievance, it's direct action for them. Very often, the union leadership is lagging behind, wanting to catch up with what the workers are up to. For example, in 1995, pension reforms were defeated by going out on demonstrating on the streets. In 2005, students defeated a first employment contract by direct action. Now, the French do have a history of revolution. Don't worry, I'm not going all the way back to the Paris Commune. They do have a history of revolution. We only need to go back as far as somewhere like 1968 to look at how close the France came to a revolution. Very, very close. The government at the time were trying to push through reforms in society and in education in the universities. And also, 68 might ring a bell, Vietnam was going on. French were the original the colonizers of Vietnam. In fact, they were defeated by the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong, and they left, and that's when the Americans came in. So to be against the war in France was very much, what young people were very much against the war in Vietnam at the time. So there was very much this tradition of revolution in France. On this occasion, 68, public opinion was very, very sympathetic to the students. And the nice, the powerful thing about 68, it was the first time ever that students and workers combined, which made it a very toxic, powerful force in France at the time. So that was it must have been a brilliant time to have been it, you know, because it was a real revolutionary fever in the air. You know, there was rituals of revolution where they were played out with gusto. There was black flags, red flags, and clenched fists held high. And the university students even set up Soviets to discuss what they're going to do and where they're going to go next. And in fact, in May of 68, 10 million, would you believe? I think if 10 million, the government have got a serious problem. 10 million on strike. As I said before, the union leaders just couldn't, they were playing catch up, you know, they couldn't keep up with what was going on. The government tried to split workers from students, but they failed. And in the end, I'm afraid that although they came very close to a revolution situation, the revolution was eventually lost down to bourgeois democracy, in my opinion. I just voted. So there is that history of people being very successful. A new movement has actually sprang out of the protests in France. It's a movement called Nuit Debout. Now that roughly means in English, the night debates. And these have been going on in the Place de la République in Paris. Hundreds of students are getting there in the evenings at night, and they're discussing ways of increasing the protest, joining the unions, and what to do next. So very healthy political debates in this new movement. And the new movement has been compared to the Indignados movement in Spain, and also has been compared to the Occupy Wall Street movement that's actually in America at the time. You know, mainly young people coming together, tired of the old politics, coming together to debate what to do next. So that's something positive that's coming out of it. Obviously, you've got commentators on the right, which I, you know, whether I should mention them or not. But Alan Finkielkraut is a conservative philosopher, and he just calls the protesters fascists. Marine Le Pen demanded the movement suppression, so we know what would happen if she was in power. She called it a source of violence and degradation. And Nicolas Sarkozy just called them brain dead thugs. So there is this opposition from these people on the right, obviously. The other thing we have to remember about France, that there were these attacks in Paris last November. And that means that the country went under what we call a state of emergency. What Hollande did, Monsieur Hollande did, he drafted up an old law from 1955, and this was part of France's dirty counterinsurgency war in Algeria. He's using that legislation, which places limits on protests and gives additional power to the state security, and these laws were actually extended for a second time on February 16th. But on the whole, what those laws have been used for is they've been used to harass France's large Muslim population. That's what they've been used for. So I'm going to take a drink. However, resistance is emerging into anti-capitalism and anti-state repression. There was a new airport in Nantes, the Notre Dame de Land Airport, which protesters had built a community, and they were using these new laws to actually evacuate the to evict the protesters so they could build the airport. Calais jungle, of course, where the migrants, the refugees are, they had to back off there because of the resistance, including a hunger strike. That was in Calais. So with the suspension of civil liberties under the state of emergency, has given French police a green light to crack down on protesters against the labour laws, including the use of tear gas. So, one of the impressive aspects of the new movement is the sheer number of cities and towns that are actually getting involved. So there's been clashes between police and students in Paris, as well as Nantes, Rennes and Lyon. And in fact, the air traffic controller strike recently cancelled 20% of flights, causing delays at Charles de Gaulle Airport. The debate in Parliament for the introduction of these new labour laws actually started on May the 3rd. The government did try watering down the bill, but this has failed to calm the students who are demanding its total withdrawal. So, right, I've got something hot off the press here, because when you're doing something like this, you know, things are moving as you're speaking, almost. It would appear that Monsieur Hollande cannot get this bill, these new reforms, through Parliament with his own socialist MPs, because too many of the socialist MPs are actually rebelling. So he's done his maths and he knows he can't get it through. So what he's doing is going to get it through with a special decree, which is a way of bypassing Parliament. Now this, in effect, really is a sign of weakness, because he can't get a bill through with his own members of Parliament. Now the Conservatives, forever looking for an opportunity, are calling for a vote of no confidence. But of course, the Conservative vote of no confidence, they are looking for these left-wing rebel MPs to vote with them. Now whether they will or not, I don't know, because it's all right rebelling against it, but when it comes to supporting a vote of no confidence, they may not be prepared to do that. So that seems to be the state of play at the moment. He can't even get it through Parliament. He's having to use special powers, a special decree, to get this through. More generally then, voters across Europe have got the message from the way Greece's opposition to austerity was crushed. What it means, you can vote for whoever you like, but it's not going to make any difference. So voters are getting that, know exactly what's going on all over Europe. However, of course, there is this general feeling that there's a revolt against the status quo. For example, Spain can't form a government at the moment. the two parties that have dominated Irish politics since independence, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, couldn't muster more than 50% of the vote. In Austria, you have a runoff between the Greens and the far right. You know, in a way, Marine Le Pen supporting France is due to workers' frustration, and the failings of the left, really, to offer them an alternative. However, on the more optimistic side of things, the movement has a couple of things going for it. The government is not in a strong position. Okay. And the opponents of the labour laws are swimming against the tide of public opinion. So a defeat for the government would mark a dramatic shift. It would create a context in which the radicalisation embodied in student movement and Nuit Debout could be deepened and extended. Now, it's not going to be easy, but the events of the last 2 months have shown that there is enough popular outrage for French capital to be challenged. Now, on the leaflet for the meeting, I noticed at the end here what can we learn from the struggle? Well, what can we learn from the struggle? I think what we can learn from the struggle is the way the French go about it. You know, I think we here wait to be told from our union leaders what to do, and there, of course, one of the things we've learned is they just get off their backsides and get out onto the streets. So I think we could learn a lot from that, from the way that they go about things there. And the final thing here, it says, could we build a similar movement here? Well, I think there's a difference in that they are fighting to protect what they already have. We would be trying to claw back what we've lost. Yeah. So that would be the difference between the two movements. But I think we must build a movement here. Because if we don't, the situation, in order for them to maintain their profits, they have to screw us. They've got to maintain the profits. And if we allow them to carry on like that, you know, all our public services are just going to diminish. They're just going to be handed over to the private sector. It's going to maintain their profits. Yeah. So the answer to that is, could we build? I think we must build a similar movement here.
Yeah.